All right, get ready because we're going to deep dive into a case today that has, well, a little bit of everything. Immigration drama, power struggles, you name it. And it all culminates in a Supreme Court showdown that still has implications to this day. We're talking about Chi Lung v. Freeman. This one landed right in the thick of some pretty intense anti-Chinese sentiment back in 1875.
Yeah, you know, it's really fascinating to see how this case pits a single woman's fight for her freedom against a whole state trying to control who gets to enter. We've got excerpts from the actual Supreme Court opinion for this one and a pretty awesome legal brief that kind of breaks it all down.
So paint us a picture of what was going on back then.
All right, so picture it. 1875, San Francisco. It's a bustling port city. Ships are coming in from all over, including, of course, China. One ship arrives, full of passengers hoping for a fresh start. But for one passenger, Chi Lung, things didn't exactly go as planned.
Yeah, and I've got a feeling this is where California's not-so-welcoming law comes into play, right?
You got it. California at the time had this law that wasn't exactly known for its inclusiveness.
Okay, so break it down for us. What exactly was California trying to pull here?
So, on the surface, it sounds almost reasonable. They said it was all about protecting the state from passengers considered, quote, lewd, criminal, or infirm.
Right. I mean, sure, every state wants to keep out the riffraff. But I'm sensing there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, way more. See, this law gave the state commissioner of immigration just an insane amount of power to basically label anyone arriving by ship as undesirable. And, get this, the ship's captain then had to post a $500 bond for each person that got flagged.
$500. Back in 1875, we're not talking about a parking ticket here, are we?
No, we are not. That was serious money back then. And, oh, guess who got to pocket a cool 20% fee for each of those bonds?
Let me guess. The commissioner.
You got it. Talk about a conflict of interest, right?
Yeah. It's almost like they set up a system where it pays to discriminate. So this commissioner, he gets to decide who's lewd or undesirable based on what his gut feeling. And then he gets a kickback for every person he targets. It just seems so ripe for abuse.
Exactly. And that's where Chi Lung's story becomes so important. This commissioner, using his own, shall we say, unique judgment, decides to slap that lewd label on Chi Lung, forcing the ship captain to fork over a bond just to get her released.
Hold up. So they're just throwing around these labels without any real evidence? Talk about adding insult to injury.
It was a system practically designed to target vulnerable folks. And get this, while some of Chi Lung's fellow passengers got hit with similar accusations, they were eventually let go. But Chi Lung, she stayed detained. You can only imagine what was going through her mind, the fear, the uncertainty, stuck in this legal limbo while her friends are out there starting their new lives.
And here's where it gets really juicy, legally speaking, because Chi Lung's case, it didn't just end there. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And in doing so, it raised some huge questions about states' rights versus federal power.
Oh, yeah. This became a full-on battle royale over who gets to call the shots on immigration. Could a single state just create its own little immigration policy, potentially throwing a wrench into the whole system? The feds were not happy about California trying to muscle in on their turf.
All right, so we've got a woman fighting for her freedom, a state trying to flex its authority, and a showdown brewing in the highest court of the land. Break it down for us. What were the major legal arguments flying around in this case?
Well, the court zeroed in on some key constitutional concepts. One of them was the Commerce Clause. This basically gives the feds exclusive rights over commerce with other countries. We're talking immigration, international trade, diplomacy, all that falls under their jurisdiction, not the individual states.
So it's like California walked into a room full of diplomats and said, move over, we'll handle this.
Ooh.
I can't imagine that went over too well.
Yeah, not exactly a recipe for smooth international relations. And then there's this concept of federal preemption. This basically means that when Congress has power over something, states can't just pass laws that clash with federal law. It's like the Fed saying, we're in charge here, folks. You can't just make up your own rules.
So even if there weren't specific federal immigration laws at the time, the court was basically saying California couldn't go rogue and create its own immigration policy.
You got it. They saw immigration as a national issue, something that needed a unified, consistent approach. They were drawing a line in the sand. Immigration, that's our turf.
But wait a minute. Don't states have some power to protect their own citizens? What about those police powers we always hear about? The authority to regulate health and safety within their borders? Couldn't California argue that they were just trying to keep their people safe?
That's a great point, and it's where things get a little more complicated. The court acknowledged that, yes, states do have a role in protecting their citizens. but they can't use that power as a cover for discrimination or to interfere with areas clearly under federal control.
So in a nutshell, the court was saying, nice try, California, but we see what you're doing here. This isn't about public safety. It's about targeting Chinese immigrants.
Bingo. The court saw right through California's little scheme. They knew it wasn't really about protecting the public. It was a way to target a specific group and, let's be honest, squeeze some money out of them under the guise of regulation.
So the stage is set. The arguments are made. Everyone's on the edge of their seat waiting for the Supreme Court's decision. What happened?
Well, Justice Miller, the one who wrote the majority opinion, didn't hold back. He called California's law, and I quote, a most extraordinary statute. Basically designed to give one person, the commissioner, the power to block ships full of passengers and to engage in what he called systematic extortion.
Systematic extortion. Wow. The court didn't mince words. They were clearly calling out a blatant abuse of power.
Oh, absolutely. They saw it for what it was, a system built to exploit vulnerable people and line the pockets of those in charge. And on top of that, they understood how this kind of unchecked authority could create chaos in international relations, leading to all sorts of diplomatic nightmares.
So they weren't just thinking about this one case, right? They were worried that if one state got away with this kind of law, it would open the floodgates for other states to create their own immigration policies, potentially sparking conflict with other countries.
Exactly. They even said that a single state acting alone could embroil us in disastrous quarrels with other nations. They knew that letting states dictate immigration policy could completely undermine the federal government's power to manage foreign affairs.
It's like they were looking into a crystal ball and seeing a future filled with diplomatic headaches and international incidents.
They understood that when it came to dealing with other countries, a unified national approach was absolutely critical. The federal government needed to speak with one clear voice, not have a bunch of states all shouting their own agendas.
So the court's decision in Xi Lung v. Freeman wasn't just about protecting one Chinese woman from an unfair law. It was about setting a clear precedent for the entire country.
You nailed it. They were establishing a fundamental principle. When it comes to immigration, the federal government is in charge, period. They were protecting individual rights, safeguarding the nation's interests on the global stage, and drawing a very clear line in the sand.
So we've established that Xi Lung v. Freeman was a landmark case. But it wasn't just about sending a message to California back in 1875, right? This case has had some serious lasting power.
Oh, absolutely. This isn't just some dusty old case sitting on a shelf in a law library somewhere. Xi Lung has popped up in tons of cases over the years, and often in situations you might not expect.
Really? Like what? Give us some examples. You know, I'm always fascinated by how these old legal battles end up shaping the world we live in today.
Okay, so for instance, it's been used to challenge state laws that were trying to regulate international adoption.
Wow, international adoptions. So we're talking about families being formed across the globe, and this case about a Chinese immigrant in San Francisco is playing a role.
You got it. Think about it. International adoptions, they involve crossing borders, navigating international agreements. Xi Lung set a precedent for the federal government taking the lead in those sorts of complex situations.
That's pretty wild. What else?
Well, it doesn't stop there. Xi Lung has also been used to strike down state regulations that were interfering with international shipping. You know, those massive cargo ships moving goods across oceans. The court, back in Xi Lung, made it clear that the feds have the authority to keep those international trade routes running smoothly.
Makes sense. Can you imagine if each state had its own set of rules for ships coming into its ports? It would be complete chaos. Any other surprising examples?
Get this. It's even been cited in cases questioning whether state laws that try to criminalize certain kinds of speech are constitutional, you know, speech that they deem harmful to foreign relations.
Hold on. Are you saying that a case about immigration from the 1870s is now being used to protect free speech? That's incredible.
It really shows you how fundamental the principles at stake in Xi Lung are. It all comes down to figuring out where state power ends and federal power begins, understanding the limits of what states can and can't do, and making sure that individual rights are protected from government overreach.
Okay, so Xi Lung, it's like the legal granddaddy of so many issues we're still wrestling with today. But let's get down to brass tacks. How would this case apply to all those heated immigration debates going on right now?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's not like Xi Lung offers some easy answer to every single immigration controversy, but it definitely gives us some valuable insights into how courts might view these issues.
Like what? Can you give me an example of how Xi Lung might be used in a modern immigration case?
Sure. For starters, it highlights the danger of letting states enact immigration laws that are clearly discriminatory, arbitrary, or just plain unfair. You know, those laws that seem designed to target specific groups or that create this confusing patchwork of different policies across the country.
So something like a state law that forces police officers to check the immigration status of anyone they stop, even if there's no reason to suspect they're here illegally, that would probably raise some red flags in light of Qilong.
Definitely. Remember, the court back then really emphasized that state laws have to be based on legitimate public safety concerns, not just a desire to go after certain groups or to create a system where immigration rules change every time you cross a state line.
Okay, that makes sense. But what about a state law that, say, prohibits undocumented immigrants from getting certain public benefits, like driver's licenses or in-state tuition at public universities? Would Qilong have anything to say about that?
Now we're getting into some really tricky territory. That kind of law, it would likely trigger a much more nuanced legal analysis. The courts would have to look at the law's purpose, its actual impact on people, and whether it's truly necessary to achieve some legitimate goal the state is trying to accomplish.
Sounds like a case for the Supreme Court. They love those thorny constitutional questions.
Right. And believe it or not, there have been several cases in recent years where states have tried to pass laws restricting the rights and benefits of undocumented immigrants, and the Supreme Court has had to weigh in and make a ruling.
So we're talking about Qilong v. Freeman, a case decided over 150 years ago, still being cited and debated in courtrooms today. That's mind-boggling.
It really shows you how relevant its core principles still are. Qilong serves as a potent reminder that these legal battles over immigration aren't just about abstract theories. They're about real people's lives, their families, their futures, their hopes and dreams.
You know, I keep thinking back to that systematic extortion that Justice Miller talked about, with the commissioner getting a cut of every bond. Does that have any parallels in the immigration debates happening today?
You're hitting on a really important point. The whole idea of using money as a way to control immigration is still very much alive. Think about things like visa fees, funding for border walls, the costs associated with detention and deportation. These are all ways that money can be used to influence who gets to come into a country and who gets to stay.
So even though Qilong was decided back when people were riding around in horse-drawn carriages, it's still speaking to some of the most pressing issues we're facing today.
Absolutely. It's a great example of how history often repeats itself and how those legal battles from the past can shed light on the challenges we're grappling with right now.
Well said. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground, the historical context, the legal arguments, the implications for today. But before we wrap up, I think there's one more crucial aspect of Qilong that we need to address.
I'm all ears. What are we missing?
The whole issue of diplomacy and foreign relations. Remember, the court in Qilong seemed really concerned about the potential for state laws to create international incidents and to interfere with the federal government's ability to manage foreign policy.
You're absolutely right. That was a huge part of their rationale. They recognized that immigration isn't just an internal matter. It's fundamentally tied to how a country interacts with the rest of the world.
They even used some strong language,
talking
about states potentially embroiling us in disastrous quarrels with other nations. That's not exactly beating around the bush.
Not at all. They saw how state laws could cause diplomatic headaches, damage relationships with other countries, and even potentially escalate to economic or military conflicts. They knew things could spiral out of control quickly if states went rogue on immigration policy.
So they weren't just looking at what was happening within the U.S. They were considering the global consequences of letting states run wild with their own immigration policies.
Exactly. They understood that in the world of foreign affairs, the federal government needs to present a united front. You can't have 50 different states all doing their own thing and expect other countries to take you seriously.
It would be like showing up at a UN meeting with each state sending its own representative and each one with a completely different stance on immigration. It would be chaos. But how does this apply to today's world? Are there recent examples of state laws that have actually caused diplomatic blowback?
Oh, definitely. Think about some of those recent controversies over state laws that try to punish companies for doing business with certain countries, or laws that try to impose sanctions on foreign governments. These kinds of actions often raise concerns about whether states are overstepping their bounds and meddling in foreign policy, which is supposed to be the federal government's domain.
So it's like Qilong is a cautionary tale, reminding us that even when states think they're doing the right thing, their actions can have unintended consequences on the international stage.
Exactly. And in today's interconnected world, where events in one part of the world can quickly ripple across borders, it's more important than ever to think about the diplomatic implications of what states are doing.
This deep dive has definitely given me a lot to think about. I feel like I've got a much deeper understanding of Chi Lung V. Freeman now, its historical context, the legal ins and outs, and its relevance to the debates happening today.
I'm glad to hear that. It's a fascinating case, and it sparks all sorts of important conversations about federalism, individual rights, and the limits of state power.
It's so easy to get lost in the weeds, right?
Yeah.
Like all the legal back and forth, the constitutional arguments, the big picture implications. But, you know, at the end of the day, Chi Lung V. Freeman, it's a human story.
It is. It is. We can't forget that.
Right.
I mean, behind every single case, there are real people whose lives are affected, their hopes, their dreams, everything.
And Chi Lung's story is especially, I don't know, powerful, I guess. Put yourself in her position. Imagine traveling to a whole new country. All this anticipation, maybe some fear of the unknown, and bam, you're detained. Labeled as lewd, which, I mean, that word carries a lot of weight and judgment, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're basically held hostage because of this law that just seems like it's meant to keep people like her out.
And it's a stark reminder, I think, of how the legal system, even when we have good intentions, can be used to marginalize and harm people. And it's based on their origin, their appearance, just their perceived differences.
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking to think that Chi Lung, she wasn't alone. Right? There were so many other Chinese immigrants facing these same challenges.
Yeah.
And so many whose stories didn't get heard. You know, they never made it to the Supreme Court, silenced by fear or just circumstance.
Exactly. I mean, Chi Lung V. Freeman is like a huge reminder of the human cost of all that prejudice and discrimination. It reminds us that the law, it can be a tool for good, but it can also be a tool for evil, right?
It can.
And it's on us to make sure that it's protecting the vulnerable, not exploiting them.
And Chi Lung's fight, you know, it reminds us that fighting for justice, it's rarely easy. It's rarely simple or straightforward. I mean, think about what she went through. She had to navigate this complex legal system, challenge these powerful authorities, appeal all the way to the highest court in the land just to get her rights recognized. That takes serious courage.
Absolutely. It's inspiring. Her case didn't just get her own freedom. It set a precedent. That has echoed through the decades, you know. It paved the way for so many others to challenge these discriminatory laws and fight for equality.
So as we're wrapping up this deep dive, what are some key takeaways you hope our listeners will take away from all this?
Well, more than anything, I hope they'll remember how important it is to stand up for what's right, even when it's tough, even when it feels like you're up against a wall, right? I mean, Chi Lung's story is a testament to the power of courage and just not giving up.
Yeah. It reminds us that we all have this responsibility, this duty to speak out against injustice and to work to make a more just and fair world for everyone.
Absolutely. And second, I hope they'll remember that the law is powerful, like really powerful. And like any tool, it can be used for good or for bad. It's up to us to make sure it's used for good, to uphold fairness and equality and human dignity.
We can't just assume it's always going to be on the side of justice. We have to be involved. We have to shape it, hold the people in power accountable, and make sure it actually reflects what we believe in.
Right, exactly. And lastly, I hope everyone listening remembers that history has a lot to teach us, if we're willing to listen, that is. Chi Lung V. Freeman, yeah, it might seem like some old, irrelevant case from forever ago, but the ideas behind it are just as relevant today as they were back then.
It reminds us that the fight for justice never ends. It's a relay race. Each generation takes the baton and runs with it. In cases like Chi Lung, they light the way. They show us what's possible when people stand up and say no more and they just refuse to back down.
Yeah, that's so true. It's a reminder that even when it feels impossible, change can happen. Justice can win out. And we can bend that arc of history toward a better, fairer future.
I like that. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up our deep dive. It's been amazing to explore Chi Lung V. Freeman with you. The history, the legal twists and turns, and how it all still matters today.
I agree. It's been a great conversation. I always love looking back at these landmark cases and seeing how they continue to shape, you know, our laws and how we think about justice.
And to everyone listening, thanks for joining us on this journey. We hope you learned something, that it got you thinking and maybe even inspired you a little. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep fighting for a better world.